This is Radical Love Life, an ongoing series of podcasts and special events where we explore faith outside the boxes. Hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Kelly. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
I am freaking awesome, as always.
Awesome. That's so good to hear.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. I'm kind of still a little bit on a high from last night, where, you know, got to do a virtual launch on Divine All Along Foundation.
Woo! Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today. Today, our guest is our co-host, Mark Dilcom, who's the executive director and founder of Divine All Along. Or is it officially the Divine All Along Foundation? Or
it's a great question. Thank you for having me on your show, Kelly. I very much appreciate that. Great to be on.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, I've heard so many good things about Radical Love Live, and it's really an honor to be on this. So thank you for asking.
We're honored to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you. So yes, the official name is Divine All Along Foundation, Inc., formed in New York, but we'll go by, we do go by Divine All Along.
And the tagline is ending religious abuse for our queer family.
Yeah. So came to me, I was inspired. You know, first of all, let's talk about where Divine All Along came from. Mm-hmm. So I have a belief that we are all divine. Mm-hmm. We are born divine. We are always are divine. Even in our most poor forms of our human experience, which, you know, we can use examples, or I think upon my own life, where I have been less than a really awesome human, I still always had my divinity, but I didn't know it, right? Mm-hmm. I was separated away from it. And so that's a part of my backstory that we can talk about. But
yep.
So that was the reason why I named it Divine All Along, like just as a simple recognition of that. And then as far as the tagline, ending religious abuse for our queer family, its mission is to end religious abuse. And, you know, I define that as something that's done to us either physically or mentally, emotionally. And then there's the trauma that comes from that as well. And this is fairly new terms, you know, in our culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been around for a while. In fact, religious abuse and trauma have been around for a long time.
Right. It might be the first abuse and trauma.
Yes. I think way back when, we could go way back, you know, pre-Christian days as well, where religion has been used to other oppress, marginalize, and do all kinds of...
Right, justify, absolutely. Wiping out people's lands. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Rationalization and justification fit right in there with that religious abuse. But we're finally at a point in time where we're now talking about this out in the open, because religious abuse and religious trauma is typically those things that have been shared only in therapist offices and things like that. So, but for our queer family, that's all intentional as well, because it is focused in on LGBTQ plus folks, mm-hmm. Which I'm a member of the tribe and community. And so, but I say for our queer family, because we're all family, I believe in oneness. Hence mm-hmm. the reason why, if you look at the logo, it represents several different things, which is a globe with, you know, different elements in there that represent both individual and the sum total together to represent the individuality, the divinity, and also the wholeness and all of that.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Yeah, that's a lovely logo.
Yeah, thank you. And that's what inspired me for that, to focus again on how we all together are going to end religious abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's how that came about.
So, well, it's an amazing cause, and definitely, I mean, there's so many people that we've talked to either on the show or privately who have experienced religious abuse and have experienced trauma after that because of the religious abuse. Let's kind of separate those definitions. And people, you know, queer people are definitely singled out. And it's, you know, that's one of the major talking points of the 21st century, one of the major conflicts in a lot of religious spaces. So what are some of the areas of focus for Divine All Along to start making change?
I love that question. Thank you. So there's two core programs to Divine All Along. First is to help folks who are affected by the abuse and the trauma. And that program is called Reclaim Your Divinity. Mm-hmm. Again, getting back to that, we always are divine, but in like in my personal experience and many others, when we get harmed, we have a tendency to detach. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, why be a part of something that has harmed us and hurt us? So typically we'll just shut off that element of us, or, you know, we have an unhealthy relationship with our own spirituality and how we see the divine, however we describe it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that name is very intentional, Reclaim Your Divinity. And that is set up to be a peer support group. Groups that mm-hmm. will be both offered both online and in person, and they are confidential, they're affordable, and we'll start getting those up and running this summer. We're working on the curriculum as we speak, because given the nature of what this is about, we need to be really careful and intentional with how we carry out the program itself,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it won't be just divine all along staff doing this. We actually are relying on our community partners, and these are going to be organizations that we partner with to offer both online and in person.
Mm-hmm.
It can be faith-based communities. It can be LGBT centers, it could be other forms of community centers, schools, universities. I mean, it's really like anybody that aligns with our mantras and, you know, passion for ending religious abuse mm-hmm. and helping people, they will be a part of our community partner network. So they will facilitate that, and they also will provide the facilitator. That's the other piece that's so important to this, because we, again, knowing that we are bringing people together who have experienced abuse and trauma, we want to make sure that those folks are taken well care of inside those groups and settings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, peer support, as we know it, is very successful in a variety of contexts. You know, it's the same underpinnings to a 12-step, although this is different. But, you know, it's used in a lot of different ways. And it is therapeutic by design, not therapy. So we're not there to replace or substitute, you know, one-to-one therapy or something like that. But it's a space where people can come together with others who have similar experiences and share that and put that out there. And from my own personal experience, I know how healing and cathartic that can be.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to any other personal work I was doing one-on-one with the therapist.
So. One also to be able to create a space that is safe, that
yes.
can be... that can be anonymous if need be.
Yes, or, you can know, be anonymous. Yep.
And I'm so glad to hear about the training for the folks that are moderating. Because if you think about how many people working in religious organizations outside of like the pastor or whatever, but think about, you know, volunteer Sunday school teachers that have never had any training at all in.
Yeah.
Taking care of children and teaching children in theology, and how many damaging things you hear from, you know, I think of like stuff that I still carry around from, you know, from Sunday school class. Like what?
Kelly, thank you for saying that, because you're absolutely right. That is a shining example where good intentions went wrong, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody thought that person, when they were asked to lead the Sunday school that you were a part of, was actually going to impact you as you go through life. And that can easily happen. And that's one reason why this is so, the entire vision of divine all along is really based around my own personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what started all this. You know, I talk about it in my own personal life, being, you know, introduced to Christianity in a loving way in a loving church community. Unfortunately, though, I started to hear other things from other people who didn't know what they were saying, and it was strictly their opinions. And, you know, this is also when I'm figuring out that, you know, I'm queer, you know, and I'm, you know, it's like, it, you know, I have all this stuff. And then you start hearing, like, well, now you're damaged and you're defective and, you know, you're not what God wants you to be. Mm-hmm. And you've got you're sinful and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, for me personally, that really messed me up for a long time.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and it wasn't, it wasn't anybody's, it wasn't malevolent. That's a crazy thing. Mm-hmm. Nobody was like, you're evil. Like nobody sitting directly in my face, but it was the stuff I was picking up and hearing out there in the culture and stuff. And so I absorbed that and I had to find very unhealthy ways to cope with that. And so once I had to start dealing with my own stuff, mm-hmm. you know, about 11 and a half years ago, I realized there's going to be a call for all of this. I don't want anybody else to have to go through what I did as a kid. And, you know, even though this happened to me in the 70s and 80s when I was growing up, this is still going on today just as much as ever.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, you know, the idea of political progress is always a little bit of a myth because it seems like we go a little bit progressive and then back to, you know, a bunch of people try to drag us back to a conservative space and then we push forward. And right now, unfortunately, we're in a space where so many LGBTQ plus people and issues are being used as political leverage to win over you know, certain political bases, and often by people who don't even really know people or families that are that they're impacting.
Yeah, they have no idea of what damage or what the consequences are of their action for them to either gain power, hold power, control, or whatever. Now, some do, of course, but in a political context, it's we are you know, the entire queer community is typically used for a wedge issue, and it will always be one of the top, along with, you know, women's reproductive rights. There's always a certain ones, and we're in there. And it started some years ago, of course, over marriage equality, and we saw what happened. And then there was Don't Ask, Don't Tell under the Clinton administration, you know, and I will tell you, I'm the first to believe very naively that when the Obergefell ruling came down from the Supreme Court that set marriage equality across the country, I thought, whew, okay, wow. I think we as a queer community, we're past this and life is going to be great. How foolish I was to think that, because the backlash has been as strong as ever and it's transferred a little bit away from marriage equality now. But look at trans folks. Right, that are part of the community. So it's just like, whoom.
Right, and there's reams of data showing that.
Oh my God.
Supportive care for trans folks improves outcomes, improves mental health.
Yes.
And yet, people who've never read any of this are like, "Well, you can't, you know, you can't care for your children that way." You know, the like. The,
oh right.
Like the major, they want to stop parents from the flag waving, "Don't tread on me," folks are doing a lot of treading on families of trans kids.
Absolutely. And they use religion to be the tool in which to prevent it, of course, because that's not how God did this.
Right. We're saving you from yourselves.
Yeah, we're saving you from yes. Which
anyway, that could lead us down a hall there.
I get always feisty about that.
Yeah, me too.
Well, because you and I both have a vested interest in this. Mine's in personal and yours is personal too, from a family point of view. And that is the reason why Reclaim Your Divinity is there, because it's not just kids, of course, but those are the ones I do think of most, because to me, that's child abuse. I don't care what you call it. And we, you know, people could, and I look forward to these arguments because they're going to happen as we get launched, because there's the other part of Divine All Along, which is our public advocacy program that we're calling Flipping Tables. That name is not by accident, because we are going to definitely be turning some tables over and upsetting quite a few folks, but it's calling out how the flawed theologies that are used, and, you know, to me, first of all, theology is informed or uninformed opinions on interpretations of how somebody sees a religious tradition, right? And there's countless ways to look at that. Now, we're primarily focused in the Christian tradition, but, you know, the spectrum is huge in that side of this. But yet there is one consistent portion of the Christian tradition that is very anti-queer, and, you know, things must be, you know, biblically interpreted and, you know, and literal and all of that. And I'm thinking, okay, well, there's a lot of issues there. But I can't stop that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that power. That's not the point of this. But what we do have power over is we can be there for the folks that are abused by this, that there is a way that they know that if they can make it out of that, there's a way for them to find help through peer support groups like Reclaim Your Divinity.
Mm-hmm.
But then flipping tables is also calling them out for their flawed theology, because you are doing harm. You are causing abuse. And I don't care what you want to point to. What part of the Constitution says that you have that right to do that? Like, but you don't have the right to abuse people. You don't.
Right, right. Well, and that's kind of a theme through a few of the last couple conversations, a couple episodes that we've had have been about that it's okay for you to believe whatever it is that you want to believe.
Absolutely.
And if you want to be very conservative, you can be that way and
yes.
and live those values.
Absolutely.
You want to be very progressive, be that way and live yep. those values. But using that to restrict other people's liberty is going too far.
Absolutely. You cannot do that. That's just never okay. And again, I'm sure people who will hear this and will hear me in the future as well, they're like, you can't tell me what to do as a parent with my children. But really? Why can't I? Because what you don't realize what you are doing is you're actually abusing in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
Call it for what it is. Because my point is, the Christian tradition, we're going to stay within that just for a moment, there is a spectrum there. So let's say I am a parent of, and I am a member of a particular faith community that is very conservative and quite literal, and we're very anti, queer. Is mm-hmm. the best way to say that. We're traditional, as mm-hmm. they like to say. And you have a queer kid.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing that boggles my mind. I get it that you want to keep your own faith and its values, but if you loved your child, why wouldn't you want to send them into another a form of a Christian tradition that is queer affirming? Because they exist.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that's love. It's like, to be bold enough to say, I can't take this journey with you, but this is your own journey. And there's other ways to be divine and celebrate your divinity and celebrate who you are in another Christian denomination.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that's the ultimate love. Like, call me crazy. But
yeah, it's hard for me to imagine, and this is one of the reasons why I am in the expression of Christianity that I am, is it's hard for me to imagine a parent loving their child and saying, but God doesn't love you as much as I do, therefore I need for you to change so that you can be within God's love again.
Yeah.
But I would accept you however you want, but God won't. So I need to use this completely unproven method of conversion to try to convince you to be something that you're different, or you need to be celibate because clearly God marked you for celibacy by giving you this desire. None of this lines up with this kind of the embrace that I see when I, when I look at the New Testament of Jesus being like, just bring everybody else in. Bring everybody in. I die for everybody. So I want to ask about a couple of terms that came up last night. One is Divine Bill of Rights.
Yes.
How does that fit into the Divine All Along program?
Thank you for asking that, Kelly. It's the Divine Soul Bill of Rights.
It's all right. Branding is important.
Branding is important. But I'm very fortunate to work with two awesome people in addition to you, Justin Foster and Virginia Lacayo. They're my my coaches on everything we've done and helped me put Divine All Along, the business plan and the vision, everything into execution. So in one of our early meetings, we did a deep dive on what is this all about? Why is in the Christian tradition so many people harmed by something that's supposed to save them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it comes to what I've already said before it comes down to flawed theology. Mm-hmm. It's not about the faith itself. It's not about, let's be real clear. I'm not here to burn down churches or to kill off a faith system itself. What I am here to do, though, is to end religious abuse, which comes from flawed theology. And I, again, will go back to my point. If you look at different denominations just within the Christian tradition and how they interpret scripture or other elements of this, there's obviously a very wide spectrum in there. And mm-hmm. you and I have that personal experience from the Episcopal Church, which is very open and embracing and, you know, super queer friendly, mm-hmm. where you would get in another denomination. So that told us, well, that's flawed theology right there. And because of that, this is what then disconnects somebody from their own divinity, right? Mm-hmm. Again, because if I walked into one church community where I'm affirmed and I'm loved for what I am, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be disconnected. I'm going to be connected. It's as simple as that. So I thought, well, how do we put this into a statement that's unequivocal and clear? And that's where the Divine Soul Bill of Rights comes. And so
gotcha.
If you don't mind, I'll share those real quick.
Oh, sure. That'd be great.
Thank you. So I wrote these inspired again from my exploration. And it starts out with, each soul is equal in all aspects, divine, sovereign, unique, created with a birthright to explore, to know our divinity without interference of any kind, and flourish as we are created. And each of us have the right to live free from being saved and being ashamed for who we are. We have the right to celebrate our sacral energy free of condemnation and labels. We have the right to express our divine love our way and what feels right to us. We have the right to pursue our calling without fear or free of abuse and discrimination. We have the right to assign God or any name, pronouns that resonate with us and with our beliefs. We have the right to liberate ourselves from harmful power structures where no one has authority over our souls. We have the right to reject systems that monetize despair and make redemption transactional, which is, And finally, we have the right to create our own framework of faith, free to evolve as our faith evolves, which is something I've done. And I do talk a little bit about my framework of faith as well. So,
wow. Do you want to talk a little bit more about what a framework of faith is?
Sure. Mine started out as journals and a lot of rambling. So part of my story of over the last 11 and a half years, and it all started on a September Sunday morning when I came to realize I must stop my alcoholic ways and end that craziness. So I started journaling, about all the stuff that comes up in early sobriety. And I, not only is it my writings, but I begin to collect, things that I heard and quotes and, prayers and other things like that. And it just started accumulating. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of years, I had several notebooks and I had stuff on laptops and things like that. And I'm like, what have I created here? And I even went so far as to ask, people that are help authors write books. I'm like, what do I have? And they're like, well, I don't know if you have a book here. I don't know. it looks like a lot of your personal stuff. And I said, no, you're mm-hmm. right. And so I came to realize what I was building was my framework of faith.
Hmm. Okay.
And when I put that context onto it, it was like, aha, this makes sense to me. So I've since, cleaned it up and it's actually out there for anybody that wants to see it because no, it's never going to be made into a book and be sold because it is my own personal framework. Mm-hmm. You can use that as an example to build your own. But if anybody wanted to see it, just go to my website at markdilcom.com. And right there on the homepage, just click the link for a framework of faith and you can read through it. So I think it's pretty cool, actually. It's got some of my photography and it has some of my meditations. Has one section that's filled with quotes that resonate with me from people from, all the way from 1,000 years ago up to today. So that just helped me. And then it also has things like my rules of life mm-hmm. that I try to follow those to the best of my ability so that, I'm a little bit of a better, human being.
uh-huh. Oh, and I love that tradition, the idea of not just taking at face value what you hear over the pulpit, but really considering your own faith and beliefs and guardrails and, and writing it down, putting it into a considered, intentional rule of life.
Absolutely. I would encourage everybody to do this. Would I use the word cathartic for it? Yeah, I guess I would, actually. Again, for years, I didn't know what I was creating. Mm-hmm. So it was only, you know, when going through the process and talking to the folks that allowed me to finally, like, be able to put context on this and look at it and go, oh, this is a framework. And then I just, you know, again, I built framework of faith. Mm-hmm. And that is indeed what it is. I call it my personal Bible. So, and it serves me well, to your point, right? And I think it's an exercise that all should follow, because we're all divine beings. So there's a lot to be learned by, you know, there's been, what, 60 some billion people on this planet over the course of many thousands of years. And there's a lot of wisdom floating around here. And so if you just start opening your eyes and your ears a little bit, you can pick up a few of those treasures and pull them into your own life. And so, you know, I'm not here to, you know, create my own so much. I just borrow from a lot of wisdom teachers.
Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. It was interesting because, you know, you were talking earlier about interpretation, about all the different ways that that religion is interpreted. And I don't know if we all realize that even if we kind of seem like we're in agreement with somebody else, we've still interpreted it for ourselves.
Of course.
It's still a very personal thing. And, you know, each of us kind of has our own way of going. So I think it's worth it for most people to look inside themselves and at least acknowledge these are my core beliefs.
Yeah, and well said, because unfortunately, you and I are of an age and of a particular generation, you know, the Gen Xers here, that, you know, we saw what our parents went through and what we went through growing up in church communities where you dared not question, like, you know, the dogma and doctrines or anything that you were hearing, right? It was just, I mean, you could, but, you know, like,
I tried to ask some of those questions, but I usually got kind of a look from the Sunday school teacher, like, really, you're going to try to take us there?
Exactly. Yeah. It was always shunned upon because, you know, now you're messing with God's work and, you know, and all of the things that are tied to that. And of course, I get a lot of it that's tied to fear. A lot of people are like, no, it's existential and like, whoa, this afterlife thing and, you know, purpose and all of that goes with, you know, the human spirituality piece. But I am hopeful that we are at the point finally that, you know, there's been a great detachment from organized religion for some obvious reasons because it simply doesn't work. And I believe and hopeful that there's going to be resurgence back into faith because we now celebrate the individuality and that there is not one doctrine and that, you know, and of course people will pan it and say, well, that's pantheism and that's, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, mm-hmm. Call it whatever you want to call it, but it always has been that way. No two individuals ever have the exact same perspectives on any faith tradition or interpretation of something.
Right, right. One thing about, you know, when we're talking about theology and interpretation, if someone, you know, someone were listening and said, you know, I really, you know, what you're doing sounds great, mm-hmm. but theologically, I can't see how to get from here to there. I've always been taught this. I would love to believe what you believe. Are there theological resources that Divine All Along will develop or provide to be able to, you know, help somebody on that journey or at least help somebody see a different perspective
Absolutely.
That's theologically sound?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for asking that one. So the Reclaim Your Divinity is a core support program, right? So it is by design not to go into those spaces. Not that the facilitator during the support meetings themselves will dictate and control, manipulate the conversations to avoid going there. But that's not, it's really there for just the healing and sharing of, you know, of the shared personal experience. There will be another level coming out sometime later this year or maybe 2025, haven't figured this out, that will offer different ways for people to take a look at that as additional optional offering. And at any point though, regardless in a core level as well, we will always encourage somebody, if you feel the urge to explore, there are healthy ways to explore your faith and here are some of the communities to which to do that. And so, yeah, obviously, this is, and your question brings an excellent point. We're not here to, as I said about me personally, but Divine all along as well, we're not here to burn down churches. We're not here to destroy institutions or pick them apart. And it's not anti-religion. We're not here to deprogram anybody. That's not ours. That's not this either. Rather, this is based on the simple truth as we see it, that we are all divine all along, and we're here to end religious abuse. Mm-hmm. That's it, right? We're not here. Now, we're going to call out flaw theology that does harm, yes, but that's not the same as where somebody might think, well, wait a minute, are you anti-religion or are you anti-God or are you anti-whatever? No, we're not any of that. The only thing we're going to be anti of is anti-religious abuse and trauma and anti-flaw theology that harms people. That's what we'll be anti about.
Right, right. It sounds like, if anything, if there are folks that have broken away from their faith because of the way that they were treated or because of the way that, you know, that they were taught that they were wrong or broken or whatever, may actually be able to find a path back to their spirituality.
Absolutely.
Through some of these resources.
Absolutely. So again, the core level is reclaim your divinity. That's what that's all about. And then also these same folks, you know, I would think they would also want to participate on the public advocacy side as well, because you could see the natural intersection of that, because, you know, there's nobody wants to be put into these situations and they don't want to see anybody else harmed as well. So reclaim your divinity helps with the healing side of things, while flipping tables is about the public advocacy and how are there, how can we make change in our culture? And yes, I mean, this is a very big challenge, because it's never been done. So
I'm wondering, do you have any examples of practical applications that you see the public advocacy arm doing?
The only thing would be in the closest is human rights. And that's the reason why in our definition of Divine All Along, being a 501c3 nonprofit, we are a human rights defender organization. And I was very intentional putting that in there, because this is what this is all about. It is human rights.
Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of defender. That sounds like it's very protective.
Yes.
Even if sometimes the best defense is good offense.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But, it sounds like it's very protective, defending space.
Yes, and that's what we're all about. And through the public advocacy, so yes, there are forms of it out there that exist where you, for example, you could look at women's rights or minority rights. How do those things get put out into our culture, and how do we make change through this? So there's always these kinds of programs like this now that are rights-based causes. Mm-hmm. This is the first time that I am aware of, though, where it's something that is specific to queer rights, but it is within that very focused area of religious abuse in particular, because there's been great work done by many organizations like the Human Rights Campaign and many state-based LGBT organizations that have done tremendous work on basic rights as well. And there's and so we will work in parallel, and probably, well, not probably, I envision us actually being coalition leader and working with these other organizations to end this as well, because while that may not be their number one priority, can't even say number one priority, it's just not in their wheelhouse because they work a different way. They also have some of those same connections, especially when we get into legislative action and how do we systematically make changes, which means, of course, we're talking about laws and policies that get put onto books. And, you know, I don't know where that's going to go yet, but it has to start, you know. So, you know, a journey of 10,000 miles starts with the first step. So that's what this is all about. And I do believe that we will make change.
When you know, as a theologian, it's interesting to me that there are, you know, that there are so many issues out there that are influenced by religion, but there aren't always a lot of voices that are schooled in religion that are talking to them in response to be able to speak the same language.
Sure.
So I think there's an important gap there, is to acknowledge that these human rights violations are often influenced by religion.
Yes.
Therefore, somebody who is aware of religion needs to be able to speak the language to be able
Absolutely.
To address it
Absolutely.
On the same terms.
Absolutely. This is the evolution of faith. Mm-hmm. This is just a part of the process. Like how people practice their faith, 100 years ago or 200 years ago is much different than what they do today. In some cases, in most cases, some maybe not so much. But my point is that when you look at it from a human rights point of view, you have to ask yourself, what in my tradition makes this okay? And again, I can speak best in a Christian context because that's my space. You mentioned it earlier. If we're going to just rely on the teachings of this guy named Jesus, mm-hmm. I don't know how we got to where we are. I mean, yes, people will pick out the clobber passages that are used against queer folks so often about, the six. But Jesus didn't talk about any of that. And so if you're a Christian, which Jesus Christ, so there's the connection. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, I'm a follower of Jesus and his teachings. I don't know how you could do anything but love, your queer kid or your queer sibling or your queer coworker, whatever it might be. Love them for the divine person that they are, right? Mm-hmm. They're a divine being just like you are. There is no difference there. There is no separation. We create these separations, but these are man-made separations.
Right, right. Yeah. And there's that idea again of I'm protecting you from yourself or yeah. I'm protecting you from God. And that's going so much further above what,
right.
What Jesus was doing was going around and being like, okay, you're forgiven. You're forgiven. You're healed.
Yeah, right. Welcome to the human condition as a spiritual being, right? You know, and I agree. And so I love the work and our mission. We're just getting off the ground now. The entire summer, we have a lot of growing. I mean, it was a virtual launch last evening, but now we're starting our fundraising. So, folks, yes, mm-hmm. now is the time when we will start asking for money to get this thing off the ground.
So, where do people go to find out more information to get involved?
They can do all of that. So, simply go to our website, divinealalong.org, and that's divine along.org. Read about what we do, and there's a contact form there. Of course, if donate, there's a big blue button in the upper right corner. You can click on that. We have all different types of donation levels. Also, we're starting to ramp up on the volunteer program. So if you're interested in that, you can click on the contact and give us a heads up on that, and we'll be in touch as we start to roll that out.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, yeah. I am really glad to be talking with you about this
yeah.
today, to be a supporter of Divine All Along.
Yes, you are. Thank you, Kelly.
To be part of this process. I'm really proud of you as your friend and
Thank
co-host
you.
For
Thank
the
you.
Work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And, it's really, not only has a lot of thought and effort gone into this, but I can tell that a lot of love has gone into
yes,
it as well.
I do this out of love.
And I appreciate that. And I believe it's going to be a help to a lot of people.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you so much for your work. It was great talking with you about this.
Likewise. Thanks for the interview. You're a great interviewer, by the way.
Oh, am I?
Yeah,
thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, fantastic.
I'm just kind of, I do a lot of nodding. And
Yeah. I like that. I like that. Gold star for you.
Thank you. All right. Well, until next time.
All right. Thanks, Kelly.
All right. Thanks, Bert.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Radical Love Live, co-hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. All rights reserved. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and other popular podcast platforms. Go to RadicalLoveLive.com to learn more about us, watch recordings of our live events, and listen to our podcast. We also invite you to check out what Kelly and Mark are doing by going to our websites. Find Kelly at KellyWilson.com and Mark at MarkDilcom.com. This is Radical Love Live, where we explore faith outside the boxes.